Wednesday, April 20th, 1949. From Washington, D.C., news capital of the world, NBC Television invites you to attend America's press conference of the year, Meet the Press, with tonight's guest, Earl Browder, former head of the Communist Party in the United States. Four of the country's leading reporters are here in our conference room with Mr. Browder to ask him the questions you would ask. Now meet Mr. James Wexler, distinguished Washington correspondent for the New York Post. Mr. Lawrence Spivak, editor of the American Mercury magazine and a regular member of our press panel. Miss Ruth Montgomery, the only woman in the Washington Bureau of the New York Daily News, whose column is read throughout the country. And Mr. Thomas F. Reynolds, White House correspondent for the Chicago Sun-Times. Now meet our guest, Mr. Earl Browder. And finally, Miss Martha Roundtree, producer of Meet the Press.
And now, if you're ready, Mr. Browder, who has the first question? Miss Montgomery.
Mr. Browder, we all know that you were expelled from the Communist Party in 1946, but I wonder if you will tell us why you're so anxious to get back into it, that you've reapplied.
I would say that I am anxious to take part in the defense of the communists in the current trial. I have offered my services as a defense witness. My whole life has been spent defending communism and the general philosophy of Marxism.
Well, Mr. Browder, when they rejected your application, what did they mean by calling it a disguised form of anti-party action?
I can't answer their motives. You'll have to ask them.
Mr. Reynolds.
Mr. Browder, is it necessary to rejoin the Communist Party to participate in any respect in the defense of this group of people?
I would not think so. I think that it's necessary for very large circles outside the Communist Party to defend the issues in this case, because involved is the rights of all American citizens and the whole structure of the American government, the relation of government to citizenry.
Well, Miss Montgomery's question was, why did you want to get back? And you said you wanted to participate in the defense. I take it that was no answer. Why do you want to get back?
For the same reason that I want to defend communism.
Mr. Wexler.
Mr. Browder, you've indicated that you feel the communists are being unjustly tried. As I recall it, in 1943, there was a similar prosecution of a group called the Trotskyists under the Smith Act. And as I recall it, you applauded that prosecution. How do you explain your feeling about the present trial? Do you feel the act has changed or that it's unconstitutional with respect to one group but not to another?
I think you were a little wrong about your timing. The case you speak of was 1942, and it was during the period when I was in prison. I'm not able to answer your question.
Well, the Communist Party, which you were then head, approved the prosecution. Did you dissent from that position?
I was not familiar with that case.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Browder, would you accept a call to leadership again in the Communist Party if you got it?
Well, that's such an iffy question, the kind of contingency which seems to be very unlikely.
It isn't very iffy, Mr. Browder. If you were given a call, would you accept it or wouldn't you?
I would not speculate on such a thing because I have no reason to expect it.
But if you did get one, would you?
Depend entirely upon the conditions. It's not possible to answer in that.
Why are you anxious to get back into the Communist Party but not so certain about becoming its leader again? Is that because leadership is more or less an appointment from Moscow rather than an election by membership, Mr. Browder?
No, I do not think leadership is an appointment from Moscow. I was never appointed from Moscow, and I spent 15 years as leader of the American Party.
Were you removed by Moscow?
No, I was not.
Were you removed by the leadership, Mr.? Were you removed by the membership?
By the general body of the Communist Party.
Well, how do you explain the fact that for 15 years, your leadership was satisfactory to the membership, and then suddenly, 60 or 80,000, whatever number, suddenly turned not only against your leadership, but against your membership, and you were suddenly ousted after some French communists made a statement about Broderick.
I imagine that the same question could be asked by leaders of many parties because the casualty rate in party leadership of all sorts has been very high since the war.
Is the unanimity as great, though, when the dismissal occurs?
No. It's a general tendency of communists to be more unanimous, even in their mistakes.
Didn't the circumstances of your expulsion give you some real doubt about the lack of democracy in the organization which you headed?
No.
Weren't you disturbed by the phenomenon of this sudden turn on the part of people who only a few weeks before had regarded you as their leader and the violence and fury with which they condemned you in a single voice? What do you think that proved about the nature of the political organization?
It proved to me, and what I was primarily interested in, is that the post-war political situation in the world generally was very unstable and very confused. I think that we have seen that throughout American politics in these past 4 years, especially.
Mr. Reynolds.
Mr. Browder, in rejoining the party, are you going to hit the sawdust trail and reform on the line on which you were tossed out of your party? Or do you hope and expect to rejoin the party by converting the loyal followers of another line to your line of thinking?
I have no messianic complex, Mr. Reynolds. I have no feeling that I am an anointed savior for any movement. I'm only a simple American, if I may say so, who tries to think about problems and express my thoughts.
Mr. Browder, are you the man, Americus, who wrote a pamphlet called Where Do We Go From Here? Or did you have any participation in the preparation of that commentary on the policies of the Communist Party under Mr. Foster's leadership?
My answer to that would only be that I find myself in general agreement with the views expressed by Americus.
That, I may take it, is that if at least if you didn't write it, it does reflect very well your point of view.
Yes.
Well, that point of view is distinctly in opposition to the point of view of the leadership of the party, so I take it that the only way that you could possibly come back in the party would be not to hit either to hit the sawdust trail or somehow or other compromise your principles. Is that correct?
Well, if I was engaging in a discussion, especially for the Communist Party members, I would take you up, but I thought that I was talking to the general press of America tonight.
Well, there are some general points in the article which you say you agree. You have said, I take it, that you agree that the rank and file of American labor has turned its back on communists. America says that. You said that the Wallace movement has fallen into a splinter party of radical middle-class character, and that the Communist Party is torn by factionalism of a semi-Trotskyist character. Do you expect that Mr. Foster and the leadership of the party is going to allow you back if you agree to such a thesis as that?
I think the question is just a question of what are the facts, and we will not get very far by discussing them here tonight. And I don't think the general public is very much interested in these. I think that you would be performing your function representing the press if you would ask me my opinions about general political questions.
I should like to ask you, and I think as a member of the press, I'm capable of judging what the public is interested in as well, perhaps, you as you, sir. Don't you think that the public is interested in the appraisal that American labor has turned its back on the Communist Party? Is that true?
I don't think the public is very much interested in the Communist Party at this time. I think the public is interested in the Atlantic Pact, the war danger, the question of American economy, and what's happening to it, what's threatening to happen. I think these are the things: the threat of unemployment in America, the question of the war budget, the military budget, and so on. These are things that everybody's interested in.
Mr. Spitzer.
These are things that I think I have something.
When you were thrown out of the party, sir, I understand that one of your great heresies was the conviction that American capitalism and Soviet socialism could live side by side. And Americus expresses the idea that there has been a certain evolution forward in the American capitalism. Are you stepping back from what Americus said?
I think quite certainly. American capitalism and Soviet socialism can and must live side by side in the same world. They must arrive at a modus vivendi. This is necessary for America. It is necessary for the socialist section of the world.
But in that position, sir, you can't arrive at a modus vivendi with a common form which represents the basic philosophy, aggressive philosophy, I might say, of the Soviet Union. Is that so?
I think that is quite possible when America makes up its mind to face this question, to arrive at a modus vivendi. I don't think a serious attempt has been made as yet.
Well, I was thinking, sir, of your own modus vivendi with a common form. Apparently, it's been impossible since they tossed you.
Well, that's a question that's really not of the same order of importance.
Mr. Spivak.
You elevate the significance of my personality much too high.
Mr. Browder, in a book which you wrote in 1947, you said, and I quote, "Very few Americans can see why we should go to war against the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union has nothing that America wants." Is that still true?
I think it is.
There is nothing at all that America now wants from the Soviet Union.
I think that's true.
When you wrote that book, you didn't think war was inevitable, did you?
I did not.
Do you think it's inevitable now?
I do not.
You think, may I pursue this for just a few minutes?
Go ahead.
You think it isn't inevitable. Do you think it is at all likely?
I think that we're in a very dangerous state where half-rational actions by irresponsible persons might precipitate serious trouble. I think, however, that it will have to be some such irresponsible act that would precipitate war.
Mr. Browder, the communists all over the world during the past few months have said that in case there should be a war between the Soviets and America, that they would take the side of the Soviets. The American communists have said something of the same thing. Where would you stand in a case of that kind?
I think that there is no reason why America and the Soviet Union cannot peacefully settle their problem.
That isn't a question, sir.
The
question is, where would you stand in such a case?
And would you permit me to develop the answer in my way?
Yes, sir.
I would say that there is no reason why the outstanding differences between America and the Soviet Union cannot be settled around the conference table if America wants such a settlement.
Not if Russia wants such a settlement.
Russia has demonstrated that she wants such a settlement. I would elucidate that, if you wish, by pointing out specifically that on the central question of the settlement of the post-war world, what will happen with Germany? The Soviet Union has made proposals designed in the form and with the intention of being proposals for a joint policy of the four great powers.
May I bring you back to my question?
Then, but first.
May I bring you back to my question, sir?
I will come to your question. But America, rejecting the Soviet proposals, has made no counterproposals. The world does not know what America proposes as a four-power policy on Germany.
Well, Mr.
In case
Brown,
America
how do you...
were obdurate, in case America were obdurate, I mean, evidently from what you say, only America won't sit down. The Russians have always been right, the Americans are always wrong.
I think
suppose there is a clash, where would you stand? Would you take the position that the American communists have on the side of the Soviets and that the communists all over the world have taken?
I think I have made it clear by what I've said to you. The central question in Germany, the Soviet Union has proposed a modus vivendi in the handling of the German question. America has shown no desire to arrive at it. If, therefore, trouble arises over that issue, the fault specifically belongs to America.
And you would side with the Soviets in that case?
In that case, I certainly would adopt the policy that was laid down by International Tribunal in Nuremberg, which condemns aggressive warfare as a crime against humanity which must be punished.
And you would take the side of the Soviets?
I would take the side against the aggressor.
Mr. Browder, I have before me a quotation which I would like to read to you, if I may. "Love of country is one of the most basic things in life and one of the most blessed. Without it, a man has no place in society." Would you be surprised if I told you that that statement was made in the Soviet Union by the secretary of the Young Communist League of the Soviet Union?
No,
you don't agree with
that
at all, do you? You don't agree with that at all?
Oh, yes, I agree with that.
Well, you would not take the side of your country. You would determine in advance, as you now have, that the Soviets are right and that your own country is wrong, and with the communists throughout the world, you would take the side of the communists in a fight in which your own country was involved. Is that so?
No, I have not judged in advance. My answer was based upon the present situation, the present status of the international relations. That status is that the question is up to America to decide whether peace shall be established and defined, and that if the peace is not defined, therefore, the fault is with America.
America
must define her policy on Germany before she can have any moral standing before the world.
Mr. Browder,
America must define a policy on Germany before she can expect to have the support of the masses of Europe.
Mr. Browder, you have taken the side of the Soviet Union in political warfare. Would it be fair now to say that you will take a gun for the Soviet Union in case of shooting warfare?
I think that you are much too ready to assume the existence of this war, and I think that your duty is not to try to hasten such a war, but to try to prevent it.
Well, Mr. Browder, you have suggested, however, on the premise of your position is that the United States holds unilateral responsibility for this crisis. Now, how do you reconcile that with the fact that the Soviet Union refused to participate in the Marshall Plan, although invited to do so by the United States? The Soviet Union rejected proposals for international control of atomic energy made by the United States. Would you suggest that in all these disputes, the United States has been at fault and the Soviet Union has been the innocent victim of a conspiracy?
I would prefer to concentrate attention tonight upon the central problem out of which all else flows. You cannot expect to arrive at an agreement between the great powers on any subordinate questions so long as there is no agreement on what is to be done with Germany.
Yes, but you have stated for yourself what you regard as the central problem. Others regard the economic reconstruction of Europe as the central problem. Participation in the Marshall Plan as the great dividing line of the post-war era. What I'm really asking you is whether you are arguing tonight that there is a unilateral blame involved in the so-called Cold War and whether you place that blame upon the United States.
I say that there can be no modus vivendi for peace in the world so long as the German question is unsettled. The German question cannot be settled so long as America refuses to state its position.
Can there be a peace in the world as long as the common form is engaged in a worldwide struggle against the democratic nations of the West?
I think that if the German question were settled, you would not have to talk about the common form.
Miss Montgomery now. Mr. Browder, what happens to make a communist? What happens to a Kansas boy like you that you'll stand up here and take the side of another nation against your own country?
No, I don't take the side of another nation against my own country. I am defending America. I consider that the greatest danger to America is this situation in which it now exists. Nobody can defend America if they do not try to solve the present world situation. Nobody can defend America by trying to drive this impasse in international relations toward a violent solution, because a violent solution will be disaster for both sides.
Mr. Browder, for whom do you speak? You no longer speak for the Republic, the Communist Party. Do you represent anyone but yourself?
I think perhaps in this discussion this evening, I represent more Republicans than you might think at first.
Do you enjoy that position?
I do. I am very glad to notice that even Republicans are beginning to be very much worried about the present drive or drift towards war.
Mr. Browder, how do you explain the fact that you so frequently find your own country wrong in all of these issues? But I've never seen you criticize the Soviet on any issue. Are they always right? Is Stalin godlike in his judgment? Does he ever make mistakes?
I don't think they're always right. I think they make mistakes like the rest of us.
Have you ever pointed those serious mistakes out the way you have the mistakes of America?
No.
Why is that, sir?
Because I can't do anything about their mistakes, but I think that as an American, I can do something about the mistakes of America.
Well, would you have said that we should not have criticized Nazi Germany because there was nothing an American could do about the German government?
No.
Do you still represent the Soviet publishing firms in this country?
Yes, I'm formally a representative of Soviet publishing houses, but I have very little business now, I'm sorry to say.
Are your relations with Moscow as cordial as they were when you were there several years ago?
Well, there's not very much relations because I have very little business to do nowadays.
Will you keep in touch with anyone there at all, Mr. Browder? Do you report conditions here to anybody there?
Politically, no. I have no political correspondence with Moscow at all.
What kind of books do you represent? Aren't they political books for the most part, or are they novels?
Mostly scientific works I've been handling.
Scientific works related to what?
Physics.
Atom bomb.
Mathematics. Chemistry.
Atom bomb.
I haven't seen any atom bombs yet.
No. I'm talking about works, books.
No, I haven't seen anything of that kind.
Mr. Breyer, did you know Anna Louise Strong?
Yes, I've been acquainted with her.
What was your reaction to the Soviet charge that she had overnight become an espionage agent?
I have not seen any evidence to convince me that Anna Louise Strong is an espionage agent.
Were you handling any of her books?
Yes.
No.
Mr. Browder, could you interpret this for me? Here's a little quotation I picked up from the Third International, which I understand governs the Communist Party in every country. It says, every branch and member of the Universal Communist Party is pledged to indulge in national treason in case of war with the Soviets, no matter who in such a war should be the aggressor. Do you think that has any relationship at all to the stand that the communists all over the world have taken in advance of any possible war with the Soviets?
No, and I would challenge the authenticity of your quotation.
Has it any relationship at all to the answers you've given us today?
No, I would say that your quotation is falsified. You did not quote from any document of the Communist International.
We got him from a document of the Communist
International. No, no. There was never any such document of the Communist International. I'm thoroughly familiar with the documents of the Communist International. I was associated with it up until 3 years, 2.5 years, before it was dissolved.
If there were such a document...
If there was such a document, I would know of it.
Would you admit to it?
I would not agree with any such document, but there never was such a document.
If you were confronted with such a document, would you admit that there was such a one in existence?
I would not.
That I thought.
You have the document with you?
I have a quotation from it.
There is no such document.
Mr. Browder.
I know all the documents.
Let's take one at a time. My time's getting short, so let's keep the questions and answers short.
Mr. Browder, I should like to qualify, at least for some sort of a record here, your rather sweeping statements on Germany. Wasn't it true that it was Russia that walked out of the joint mechanism in Berlin in 1948? Wasn't it true that it was Russia that set up the blockade of Berlin? Wasn't it true that it was Russia that refused to carry out the compact for unification of the entire conquered Third Reich?
I think you're making a mistake, making a speech, not answering, asking a question.
Well, I was attempting to find out if perhaps this fight was bilateral. I find it rather difficult for a single country like the United States to engage in a fight by itself. I thought perhaps Russia was at least a participant.
If you insist upon going into the subsidiary issues, I would say that on the Berlin blockade, the proposal for settlement at the Paris meeting of the United Nations Assembly that was made by small nations in America's camp was accepted by the Soviet Union and rejected by America, again without any counterproposal, and that it is a matter of common knowledge among political commentators in America of all colors, that America has no policy on Germany designed to be a joint policy. Has never suggested such
a
one.
We've just gone into a three-power agreement on Germany. It seems like everybody can agree but Russia.
Exactly. And that three-power agreement is another obstacle to agreement with Russia.
We invited her in. We invited her to talk about
it. We invited Russia to agree with us. We have made no attempt to find an answer that could be agreed by both sides. That is essentially the question before the world today. Does the world have to agree with America in order to have unity?
Does the world have to agree with Russia in order to have unity?
There must be an answer to which both nations can agree.
Why do
And that is what is not being searched for today.
Why do you constantly say that America must make concessions?
Because
America must enter. Haven't
I didn't
we
say America must make concessions. I said America must find a policy that can be agreed to by both sides and represents the interests of both sides.
And is that policy to permit the Russians to gobble up the rest of Europe, Mr. Browder?
No, and that is not the issue. The issue is whether America is going to reach a modus vivendi with the socialist section of the world or whether we are going to have the continuation of this division of the world, hostility of the world, disorganization of the world, thereby disorganization of foreign markets, the world market for American goods, thereby leaving America in the position where the only way to keep our industries running is through military expenditures, ever-mounting military expenditures that threaten to bankrupt even rich America.
Isn't the issue one of just stopping aggression?
No, the issue is...
Has any other nation since the last war was over engaged in the aggressive acts that the Russians have? Has any other nation moved in the way the Russians have on their neighbors?
Russians have not moved in on their neighbors.
Did the Baltic states move in on the Russians? Did the Poles move in on the Russians? Did the Czechs move in on the Russians?
If you want the Russians out of Europe, out of Germany, for example, I think it would be very easy. I think it would be very easy if there was an agreement that both sides would withdraw their forces from Germany. It is America that is demonstrating that it doesn't want to withdraw its armed forces from Europe.
Mr. Browder, I'd like to go back to some basic things in this discussion. Aren't you disturbed by the treatment of Anna Louise Strong? Wasn't your own expulsion from the Communist Party an educational thing in your own life? Haven't you acquired a new and deeper respect for the processes of democracy as opposed to those of a police state? Now, you know that Anna Louise Strong wasn't a spy because you knew her very well.
I think that the case of Anna Louise Strong has not been answered yet. But I do not think it is important enough that you should bring it in here tonight in the question of solving the problems of war and peace in the world.
Well, you began bringing in the question of the 11 communists in New York.
You are not going to settle the international situation by the case of Anna Louise Strong. And if you attempt to, that only means you want to stir it up and make it more difficult to settle.
You mean that to raise the issue of human, social, and economic justice would be disturbing to the attempt to achieve the peace that you describe?
I say the way in which it is being raised and the way in which you and the connection in which you interjected it here tonight makes it more difficult and is designed for that purpose.
Well,
makes it more
difficult. I don't think you have a right to read anybody's motives here, but I would like to say that I think that it's perfectly relevant to a discussion which you began by reference to a trial in New York City. And what I was really trying to get at was whether the whole issue of democracy hasn't assumed any new meaning for you since you left the Communist Party in a rather abrupt and dramatic reversal.
No, I think that I understood democracy very well when I was in the Communist Party, and that I practiced it and that I defended it.
You mean you think that that you were a victim of a democratic process in the Communist Party?
I was the victim of the post-war political confusion, which America is the victim, not only I. And I'm not worried about myself. I'm worried about America and where America's going and where the world is going. And I want to stop this development towards war.
Mr. Brown.
And I will do nothing and I will say nothing that pushes us farther on the road to war.
Mr. Brown.
Sorry, I have to interrupt. Our time is up. In just a moment, we'll learn who our guest will be for next week. But first, here's a reminder.
Next Wednesday evening, NBC Television will again present America's press conference of the year, Meet the Press, over these same stations. Make a note now to join us then when our guest will be Clendenin Ryan, the man who recently stirred up a hornet's nest in New York's political circles. And now, good night for Mr. James Wexler, Mr. Lawrence Spivak, Miss Ruth Montgomery, Mr. Thomas F. Reynolds, Miss Martha Roundtree, Mr. Earl Browder. Meet the Press has come to you from Washington, D.C.